We've been hearing about the departure of Lord Krishna. The first indication was the words of Narada Muni, who told Yudhisthira that he should wait within this world until as long as the Lord is in the world. That's in chapter 13, text 50. You Pandavas may wait as long as the Lord is here on this earth, here on earth. That was an indication that Krishna, at some point, before too long, would no longer grace this world. So when Yudhisthira Maharaj began noticing the symptoms of Kali manifest in his kingdom, he began to wonder about whether or not the Lord was still present. And then finally, when Arjuna returned from his stay in Dwarka and in such a dejected, lackluster mood, and with his personal luster completely vanquished, Yudhisthira could understand that Krishna had indeed left the planet. And finally, he asked Arjuna that very question. The only cause, or he actually made it a statement, the only cause that I can ascertain for your dejection, the only thing could be, that could have caused it, is the departure of Lord Krishna. It's hard for us to imagine, of course, what it would be like to have associated with Krishna and then for him to leave. In this world, it is rare that anyone has even a glimpse of the experience of love. I once heard the story of some 75-year-old Bengali man whose mother was 90-something, and he wouldn't eat unless she fed him. So she used to put the food in his mouth. Of course, we could analyze it from a psychological point of view and say that there was this complex and that complex. But actually, just looking at it very, very simply, how much love existed between that mother and that son? How much love was there? So in this world, everyone is so love-starved, and it's so difficult to even imagine, really. We read it, oh, here's the philosophy. Arjuna was feeling very dejected, and he even lost his luster, and Yudhisthira was very disturbed. Oh, he was awaiting the time for Krishna's departure, because then he would know that it was also time for him to leave this world. But actually, the philosophy isn't the highest exhibition of Krishna consciousness. The Leela is the highest exhibition, because it gives us glimpses as to Krishna and his loving exchanges with his devotees, and we can fathom it as we can just get a glimpse of it, like the Chandrashaka Nyaya glimpsing the moon through the branches of the trees, so that it points out to us, just see what you are missing. You're already experiencing the lack in your heart, but you are thinking that the problem is you don't have enough of this and don't have enough of that. Well, there's only one thing, the Bhagavatam says, that we don't have enough of, and that is Krishna consciousness. Well, Prabhupada actually said that there is no other lack in the world other than a lack of Krishna consciousness. So Yudhisthira, or the great general Arjuna, was so devastated that he couldn't even reply to Yudhisthira immediately. Tears were coming from his eyes. He was choked up and sobbing. This was a general who had killed millions of people in his life. Such a warrior. Without crying, without weakness of knees or heart or anything, he had killed millions of people. And yet, when Yudhisthira asked him, "What is the cause of your dejection?" he could not answer due to the emotions that were evoked. Because to kill, you have to put yourself more or less in either in a shastric way. One can be, due to his realization, he can understand nahanyate hanyamani sharire, that the body dies, but the soul lives forever. But yet, one has to become very dutiful. And whether it causes you pain or not, like Arjuna, he had to kill Bhishma Drona like that. At the shoot full of arrows, Bhishma, who had protected him when he was a child, on Krishna's order, one has to become callous to some degree, philosophical or just very dutiful. But this same Arjuna was crying and could not reply to Yudhisthira. How much his heart was actually softened and touched and broken by Krishna's departure. And then, after explaining everything to Yudhisthira, he began to meditate upon Krishna's instructing him and Krishna's instructions to him, the Bhagavad Gita, the essence of all light, the essence of all knowledge. Pratijanebhyosime mam evyasyati satyam te. Krishna promised Arjuna, and you will come to me, evyasyati satyam. I promise you this. Pratijane, I promise you this, because you are my devotee. So, Arjuna remembered this and became purified. And then Yudhisthira, who had heard this from Arjuna, it was his time to decide what he would do and how he would react, because he was shocked as well. So we read text 31, which I found this last section very, very striking and very important. I remember after Srila Prabhupada left this planet, this was the section that I personally took some shelter of. So in any case, in text 32, Yudhisthira Maharaj, who had just heard this from Arjuna, now the narration will turn to how he reacted. Upon hearing of Lord Krishna's return to his abode, and upon understanding the end of the Yadu dynasty's earthly manifestation, Maharaj Yudhisthira decided to go back home, back to Godhead. We'll read from some of Prabhupada's purport, because he knew also that was the hint, the clue, the sign that he was waiting for, that it was time for him and the other Pandavas to leave. Maharaj Yudhisthira, from the beginning, and then we'll switch to the end. Maharaj Yudhisthira also turned his attention to the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita after hearing about the Lord's departure from the vision of earthly people. He began to deliberate on the Lord's ways of appearance and departure. The mission of the Lord's appearance and disappearance in the mortal universe is completely dependent on his supreme will. He is not forced to appear or disappear by any superior energy, as the living being appears and disappears, takes birth and dies, all going on by the Maya Shakti of the Lord. But Krishna, it's by the internal energy that it goes on. Sambhavam yatma mayaya. He appears by his internal energy, or that can also be translated, he appears by his causeless mercy, or by his own will, which is his mercy, and which occurs by his internal energy. Whenever the Lord likes, He can appear Himself from anywhere and everywhere without disturbing His appearance and disappearance in any other place. He is like the sun. The sun appears and disappears in its own accord at any place without disturbing its presence in other places. Therefore, this is towards the end of the purport, as per Narada's instructions, his advice to Yudhisthira in the 50th verse of the 13th chapter, Maharaj Yudhisthira also began to consider going back to Godhead. The Lord appears on the earth or any other mortal planet along with his associates who live with him eternally and the members of the Yadu family who are engaged in supplementing the pastimes of the Lord are no other than his eternal associates. And so also Maharaj Yudhisthira and his brothers and mother, etc. Since the appearance and disappearance of the Lord and his eternal associates are transcendental, one should not be bewildered by the external features of appearance and disappearance. So Yudhisthira Maharaj also decided to go back home, back to Godhead, to leave this world. It was time. Kunti Devi. Kunti, after overhearing Arjuna's telling of the end of the Yadu dynasty and disappearance of Lord Krishna, engaged in the devotional service of the transcendental personality of Godhead with full attention and thus gained release from the course of material existence. So Yudhisthira Maharaj decided to go back to Godhead, and Kunti Devi immediately fully engaged in devotional service with the same determination. A little bit down into Prabhupada's purport, we'll read to the end. As Maharaj Yudhisthira decided to prepare to go back to Godhead, so also Kunti decided, and thus she fully engaged herself in the transcendental devotional service of the Lord, which guarantees one a passport for going back to Godhead after quitting this present material body. Why does a devotee go back to Godhead upon quitting this body? Yes, Prabhu. Yes? Any other? Why does he do that? That's my question. Why does he go there? He remembers Krishna, yeah. He's earned his passage. He's paid his ticket. What helps him get on the plane? Why does he get on that particular plane? Yeah. Because that's what he wants. This is his desire. And this is what he deserves as well. That's the part about paying the ticket. But this is what he wants. He's saved and scrimped and taken together everything that he has in this life, and he's invested it simply in this one thing, serving Krishna. This is what he wants, to serve Krishna, to love Krishna, to please Krishna. And therefore, in reciprocation, with that vyavya satmika buddhi, focus, ekeha kuru nandana. Therefore, he attains the spiritual world. This is what he wants. Krishna yayatamam prapadyante. He reciprocates with us according to our desire. If we sort of want to go back to Godhead, but we'd sort of like to also become wealthy and famous, or become this and become that, or become learned, then we will become learned and famous and wealthy, but we won't be able to go back to Godhead. Yeyatamam prapadyante. But if we don't care for anything, nadanam najanam nasundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamani mama janamani janmanishware, even rebirth, whether or not we have to be born in this world, not even for liberation, but just if we care to please Krishna, if we have practiced Bhagavad Dharma so fully in our heart, and that's really all we care about, and who knows what's inside. We know, and Krishna knows, and maybe a few others. So we may be able to fool so many people, but Krishna we certainly can't fool, and we can even fool ourselves. But really, this is what the price is. It's that one has no other desire, and it is very well developed. Read it then. We'll read the part where Prabhupada says it twice. The beginning of devotional service to the Lord is the beginning of spiritualizing the present body. And thus, what does that mean? Spiritualizing the present body is the beginning of devotional service. What does that mean? Yeah, not to use the body, materializing it, it's already material, but when it's used, the senses, when they're used in the service of Maya, then it's material. But if it's used, if the senses are fully used in Krishna's service, then the body becomes spiritualized. And thus an unalloyed devotee of the Lord loses all material contact in the present body. He doesn't identify with the body. The abode of the Lord is not a myth, as it is thought by the unbelievers or ignorant people. But one cannot reach there by any material means like a Sputnik or space capsule. Are Sputniks still popular? And do people in Russia know what a Sputnik is anymore? Yes? 1957, I believe. But one can certainly reach there not by Sputnik or space capsule, or Challenger, but one can reach there after leaving this present body, and one must prepare himself to go back to Godhead by practicing devotional service. That guarantees, there's the second one, a passport for going back to Godhead. And Kunti adopted it, full, unalloyed, pure, not distracted, laser-like devotional service, focused, wanting to please Krishna, not like Kamsa's pratikul remembrance of Krishna, but actually anukul, in a favorable mood, wanting to please Krishna. And this is the natural consciousness of the living entity. Now these next two verses are interesting. They break the flow of what is going on. Kunti's going back to God, and after these two verses there's some other points in the same regard. But these two verses, because they break the flow, and they almost seem to imply that Krishna relinquished his body. And because we know that Krishna doesn't give up his body, he is his body. What verse from the Brahma Samhita? No? And? Well, no? Angani yasya sakalen vritimanti. So some of the commentators have claimed that these verses are interpolated, they're placed in there, and they don't actually belong in the Bhagavatam. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Jiva Goswami do not accept that. And they give transcendental, and certainly Prabhupada as well, following in their footsteps. They give understandings that do fit in perfectly with the philosophy. So they are accepted by our acharyas. First verse. The supreme unborn, Lord Sri Krishna, caused the members of the Yadu dynasty to relinquish their bodies. And thus he relieved the burden of the world. This action was picking out a thorn with a thorn, though both are the same to the controller. So the example that's given of the Yadu dynasty leaving this world is a thorn. So when there's a thorn that's stuck in one's hand, it's causing so much pain. So that thorn is compared to the demons in the world. And taking up a very favorable thorn, because the person who's picking it up sees one as a thorn and also the other as a thorn. But just taking up another thorn and using it as he wants, even though he sees them both as thorns, he removes the first thorn that's causing trouble. So the second thorn used by Krishna to remove the demonic element is the Yadu dynasty. But Krishna sees everyone because everyone ultimately... Hum bija pada pita, Krishna says. Everyone is his part and parcel, his servant, his son. So he sees everyone equally, like someone sees both thorns equally. But yet Krishna used the Yadu dynasty, and then when they weren't required anymore, sent them back to Godhead. Prabhupada's purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur suggests that the rishis... Now here's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's reason, explanation of why this verse is placed in here. That the rishis like Shonak and others who were hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from Suta Goswami at Namasharanya were not happy to hear about the Yadus dying in the madness of intoxication. Must have been very difficult for them. To give them relief from this mental agony, Suta Goswami assured them that the Lord caused the members of the Yadu dynasty to relinquish their bodies by which they had to take away the burden of the world. The Lord and his eternal associates appeared on earth to help the administrative demigods in eradicating the burden of the world. He therefore called for some of the confidential demigods to appear in the Yadu family and serve him in his great mission. After the mission was fulfilled, the demigods, by the will of the Lord, relinquished their corporal bodies by fighting amongst themselves in the madness of intoxication. Text 35. The Supreme Lord relinquished the body. So the word is, the Sanskrit word is where is it? Which is it? Jayat, apparently relinquished, Prabhupada translated. And this word date is also important in this verse. And kalevaram, the word body, is also important. The Supreme Lord relinquishes the body, so for this reason, the Madhva charges tend to not accept this verse as being a part of the Bhagavatam, because how could the Lord, because they're not Mayavadis, they're so against Mayavad philosophy, that the Lord accepts a body, like we accept bodies, that Ishwara, or rather Brahman, becomes under the influence of Maya and accepts a body and becomes Ishwara. So they have said that this verse is an interpolation, but the commentations of our acharyas is perfect yet. The Supreme Lord relinquishes the body which he manifested to diminish the burden of the earth. Just like a magician, he relinquishes one body to accept different ones, like the fish incarnation and others. So it's not that he has no body and then he accepts the Krishna body and then he leaves that behind and gives it up and accepts the fish, Matsya Adi, and so many other incarnations out of the 10 different incarnations. This is that would be straight Mayavad philosophy. So it's not like that. The Lord's form is eternal, and to think otherwise is to be bewildered. Just like one may see a magician perform so many tricks, and if one believes that's what's happening, you know, that he's sawing a lady in half, or he's vanishing, or he's burning himself in fire, or something like that. If one actually believes that, falls for it, the trick, then one is actually illusioned or bewildered. But that's because that's not exactly what happens. Now we'll read some comments. on this. First, Prabhupada explains Sutta's comparison to the purport, in his purport of Bhagavatam in 34. He explains, the Lord is described as Amrita, this is from the purport, deathless, because he has no material body. Under the circumstances, the Lord's dying or quitting his body is like the jugglery of a magician. The magician shows by his tricks that he is cut to pieces, burnt to ashes, or made unconscious by hypnotic influences. But all are false shows only. Factually, the magician himself is neither burnt to ashes nor cut to pieces, nor is he dead or unconscious at any stage of his magical demonstration. Similarly, the Lord has his eternal forms of unlimited variety, of which the fish incarnation, as was exhibited within this universe, is also one. Because there are innumerable universes, somewhere or another the fish incarnation must be manifesting his pastimes without cessation. Just like on the aeroplanes, they don't do it so much anymore. Now they use videos. But they used to have, when they used to use a film, they used to load it in one part and there would be five different screens. And you'd be seeing an image on one part of the screen, and later on the film would move, and then you'd see it on the next screen, the same one. And then it would move further, and you would see it on the next screen. And so Krishna's incarnations, his Leela avatars, work in that way. They are eternally performing their pastimes in one universe or another. When they finish on this screen or in this universe, they go to the next universe. Prabhupada continues, in this verse, the particular word date, eternally accepted, and not the word ditwa, accepted for the occasion, is used. The idea is that the Lord does not create the fish incarnation. He eternally has such a form, and the appearance and disappearance of such an incarnation serves particular purposes. So that was Prabhupada's comment on 34. And Jiva Goswami comments on this section in Krishna's Sandarbha Anuchet 106. He says, actually, these verses do not show that the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts the form of Krishna and then abandons it at a certain point. The word tanu, rupa, and kalevaram, which all mean the body, and the word kalevaram is used in this, and rupa also, and are used in this verse. And kalevara do not only mean body. They may also mean condition, nature, or mental conception. Lord Krishna descended to relieve the burden of the earth and protect the demigods and devotees. When these purposes were accomplished, the Lord gave up the desire to relieve the earth and protect the pious. Desire, so that's what he gave up. It is these desires that are intended by the words tanu, rupa, and kalevara in this verse. So he gave up the desire and then with his transcendental body, or he being his transcendental body, moved onward. And again, within the same Anucheda, Jiva Goswami says, the personality of Godhead manifests his form within this world and then makes his form disappear from this world. It is not that he rejects his form or that it ceases to exist. That the Lord's form is eternal, although staying in the material world for a certain time, is confirmed by the following verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, 1:15:36. So he uses this verse 36, Jiva Goswami does in Krishna Sandarbha, to confirm the point that the Lord's form is eternal. The personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, left this earthly planet in his self-same form. In Svatanva, it's probably connected to that in 36. So all three mean that he changed his desire and then took his body because his mission was finished and moved onward. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur further expands the comparison between Krishna's leaving the world and a magician's activity in his commentary on Bhagavatam 11:31-12. And I'll read that commentary because it's fun. In front of a great king, a magician approaches a stack of valuable garments, jewels, coins, and so forth, all placed there by the king. Taking a jeweled necklace, the magician tells the king, "Now I am taking this necklace, and you can't have it." This is very dangerous to do this in front of a king. And he makes the necklace disappear. "Now I'm taking this gold coin, and you can't have it," he says, and makes the gold coin disappear. Next, challenging the king in the same way, the magician makes 7,000 horses disappear. Then the magician creates the illusion that the king's children, grandchildren, brothers, and other family members have attacked each other, and that nearly all are dead from the violent quarrel. The king hears the magician speaking and at the same time observes these things taking place before him as he sits in the great assembly hall. Then the magician says, "O king, I no longer wish to live. Just as I have studied magic, so also by the mercy of the lotus feet of my guru, I've learned the mystic meditation of yoga. One is supposed to give up one's body while meditating in a holy place, and since you have performed so many pious activities, you are a holy place yourself. Therefore, I shall now give up my body." Thus speaking, the magician sits down in the proper yoga posture, fixes himself in pranayama, pratyahara, dharan, dhyan, and samadhi, and becomes silent. A moment later, a fire generated from his trance blazes forth out of his body and burns it to ashes, just like what happened to Dhritarashtra. Then all the wives of the magician, distraught with lamentation, enter into that fire. 3 or 4 days later, after the magician has returned to his own province, he sends one of his daughters to the king. The daughter tells him, "O king, I have just come to your palace, bringing along with me invisibly all your sons, grandsons, and brothers in good health, along with all the jewels and other items given by you. Please, therefore, give me whatever you consider fitting remuneration for the wisdom of the magic that has been exhibited before you. In this way, even by ordinary magic, one can simulate birth and death." One other comment. Srila Jiva Goswami's comment on Bhagavatam 11.31.12, which is the same verse that Vishwanath commented on, explains that the so-called fight amongst the members of the Jaru dynasty was actually a display of the pastime potency of the Lord, since Lord Krishna's personal associates are never subject to ordinary birth and death like conditioned souls. Good story, huh? Three or four days later, you mean starting there? The daughter tells him, "Give me whatever you consider fitting remuneration for the wisdom of the magic that has been exhibited before you. In this way, even by ordinary magic, one can simulate birth and death." What to speak of simulate? What to speak of what can happen by the Lord's pastime potency, which is what Jiva Goswami says. So then 36, when the person, 36, yes, when the personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, left this earthly planet in his self-same form, that Svatanva, from that very day, Kali, who had already partially appeared, became fully manifest to create inauspicious conditions for those who were endowed with a poor fund of knowledge. So as we read this before, Prabhupada explains in his purport, the age of Kali actually began just after the battle of Kurukshetra began to exert its influence. And Maharaj Yudhisthira only saw the signs of Kali after Krishna had left, because Krishna's presence kept Kali in check. Maharaj Yudhisthira, 37, was intelligent enough to understand the influence of the age of Kali, characterized by increasing avarice. Avarice means greed. Falsehood. Falsehood means lying, cheating, and violence. Throughout the capital, state, home, even in his home, and among individuals. So he wisely prepared himself to leave home, and he dressed accordingly. Prabhupada's purport, starting a few sentences in. The symptoms of the Kali Yuga as mentioned above, namely avarice, falsehood, diplomacy, cheating, nepotism, violence, and all such things, are already in vogue, and no one can imagine what is going to happen gradually with further increase of the influence of Kali till the day of annihilation. Worse, day by day by day by day. Now everyone is, when Prabhupada wrote this in the early 60s, Kali Yuga was it almost seems like Kali Yuga hadn't yet come out of his cage. But now he's out and roaring and raging on the rampage. How much violence, cheating, intoxication, illicit sex, etc. has increased in the last 50 years. Slaughter, everything. How incredible, actually, the increase. We have already come to know that the influence of the age of Kali is meant for godless, so-called civilized man. Those who are under the protection of the Lord have nothing to fear from this horrible age. Maharaj Yudhisthira was a great devotee of the Lord, and there was no necessity of his being afraid of the age of Kali. But he preferred to retire from active household life and prepare himself to go back home, back to Godhead. The Pandavas are eternal companions of the Lord, and therefore they are more interested in the company of the Lord than anything else. Beside that, being an ideal king, Maharaj Yudhisthira wanted to retire just to set an example for others. I think Srila Swami comments the same, that he leaves to set the example for others, although he himself had nothing to fear from Kali. As soon as there is some young fellow to look after the household affairs, one should at once retire from family life to uplift oneself to spiritual realization. One should not rot in the dark well of household life till one is dragged out by the will of Yamaraj. Strong words. 38. Thereafter, in the capital of Hastinapur, he enthroned his grandson, whose name was? Prichit Maharaj. And what is the name of his that means the one protected by Vishnu? Anyone remember? Vishnu Ratta. Thereafter, in the capital of Hastinapur, he enthroned his grandson, who was trained and equally qualified as the emperor and master of all land bordered by the seas. Just from the end of Prabhupada's purport to 38. The influence of the age of Kali gradually infiltrated the good qualities of both the kings and citizens, and therefore a tense situation developed between the ruler and the ruled. But still, even in this age of disparity between the ruler and the ruled, no one is satisfied with their rulers anywhere, whether they have a monarchy or some other type of dictatorship or a democracy. No one is satisfied with the rulers. Still in this age of disparity between the ruler and the ruled, there can be spiritual emolument. Emolument means compensation and God consciousness. That is the special prerogative. And how? We've been hearing about it, and we'll always keep hearing about what to do to bring back or to purify the consciousness despite the horrors of the age of Kali. Then Maharaj Yudhisthira posted Vajra, the son of Aniruddha, the grandson of Lord Krishna, at Mathura as the king of Surasena. Afterwards, Maharaj Yudhisthira performed the Prajapatya sacrifice and placed in himself the fire for quitting household life. Maharaj Yudhisthira at once relinquished all his garments, belt, and ornaments of the royal order and became completely disinterested and unattached to everything. Prabhupada's purport. To become purified of material contamination is the necessary qualification for becoming one of the associates of the Lord. No one can become an associate of the Lord or can go back to Godhead without such purification. Maharaj Yudhisthira, therefore, to become spiritually pure, at once gave up his royal opulence, relinquishing his royal dress and garments. The kshaya, or saffron loincloth of a sannyasi, indicates freedom from all attractive material garments, and thus he changed his dress accordingly. He became disinterested in his kingdom and family, and thus became free from all material contamination or material designation. People are generally attached to various kinds of designations and designations of family, society, country, occupation, wealth, position, and many others. As long as one is attached to such designations, he is considered materially impure or materially contaminated. 41. Then Maharaj Yudhisthira amalgamated all the sense organs into the mind, and then the mind into life, life into breathing, his total existence into the embodiment of the five elements, and his body into death. Then as pure self, he became free from the material conception of life. He gave up everything false. There's a short comment by Jiva Goswami on the next verse that will describe it in more detail, not in more detail, but a somewhat different perspective. Simple though. Purport. Maharaj Yudhisthira, like his brother Arjun, began to concentrate and gradually became free from all material bondage. First, he concentrated all the actions of the senses. As the verse says, he amalgamated all the sense sources into the mind and amalgamated them into the mind. In other words, he turned his mind towards the transcendental service of the Lord. He prayed that since all material activities are performed by the mind in terms of actions and reactions of the material senses, and since he was going back to Godhead, the mind would wind up its material activities. Wouldn't it be wonderful if the mind just would simply do that one thing, wind up its attachments? Because the mind's business is grabbing on ichha dvesha. That's the basic function of the mind. It grabs and it pushes. Things that it thinks will bring it pleasure, it grabs onto. And things that it thinks will cause pain, it pushes away. And usually this is based on a false conception of who I am. Basically thinking oneself the body. So when the mind stops doing that and becomes attached to Krishna, anukalasya sankalpa pratikulasya bhajana, accepting all that is favorable for Krishna's service and rejecting all unfavorable, then it is pure. The impersonalists, their attempt is to stop the mind, and some of them have actually become quite good at it. They become quite good at it. They can slow down their mind, they can stop their minds, and as soon as one stops one's mind, when one's mind becomes situated in goodness like that, by stopping it, forever just grabbing and pushing. As soon as the mind stops, then the consciousness becomes clear like crystal water. And then one, or what they do at that time, they can identify themselves, they perceive the reflection of the Lord in the material energy. They perceive Brahman. And they identify with that, and then they feel great bliss in the sense of a great relief. And also, of course, if they identify with Brahman, they feel some spiritual happiness. But, and there is a but in this, they can never remain in that state because they want to do something. Even if they stay sort of like that, basically like that for months and months and months, or even years and years, they always must come out. They want to go to the movies, or they want to do one thing or another. or they want to go and help others, start a hospital or something. If the whole world is illusion, what is the use of? Like if you're dreaming that you're sick and your friend is sick, is it intelligent to open a hospital in the dream or just simply wake up? So that they end up always getting caught, always, always, always. But here, he turned his mind towards the transcendental service of the Lord. So even though it is quite effective to some degree, but one can't live in that way. And therefore one must come out and get caught by Maya. So therefore in Krishna consciousness, the process is to see everything in relationship with Krishna. So although that's not easy to do because of the selfish tendencies of the mind based on the false ego, but at least if one can actually succeed in doing that due to his purity, due to his association, due to his sincerity, and following, and good hearing, and higher taste, then there is no duality in his life at all. While the impersonalist will always find a duality. When I'm in this state of consciousness, it's one thing, but then I come out, and then I deal with the world, etc., and I naturally want to enjoy. So it's not seamless. So it's very difficult, very difficult in that sense. So he prayed, which is a good hint for us. He prayed that since all material activities are performed by the mind in terms of actions and reactions of the material senses, and since he was going back to Godhead, the mind, he would pray that the mind would wind up its material activities and turn towards the transcendental service of the Lord, become attracted to Krishna. Actually, the activities of the mind cannot be stopped, for they are the reflection of the eternal soul. But the qualities of the activities can be changed from matter to the transcendental service of the Lord. So Yudhisthira, thus annihilating the gross body of five elements into the three qualitative modes of material nature, he merged them in one essence and then absorbed that essence in the self, Brahman, which is inexhaustible in all circumstances. A short comment on this by, because these yogic practices are very hard to understand for us non-yogis or aspirant bhakti yogis. But Jiva Goswami comments that all those things unfit to become merged in the individual soul were merged into where they originated. All the material things were sent back to the realm of matter from its source, because every material thing has a source. So every material thing was merged back into its source, and those things fit for merging in the soul did so. And the soul was then offered to the Supreme Soul, Sri Krishna. And that is basically what we're trying to do in Krishna consciousness. Offer ourselves to the Supreme Self. Offer the soul to the Supreme Soul with great devotion. Prabhupada explains in his purport, 242, Maharaj Yudhisthira, after distributing his kingdom to Parikit and Vajra, did not think himself emperor of the world or head of the Kuru dynasty. This sense of freedom from material relations, as well as freedom from the material engagement of the gross and subtle encirclements, makes one free to act as the servitor of the Lord, even though one is in the material world. Sava upadi vinyamuktam tat paradvena niyamalam. This stage is called the Jivan Mukta stage, or the liberated stage, even in the material world. That is the process of ending material existence. One must not only think that he is Brahman, but must also act like Brahman, because the soul will force us to act, it must, and that's the problem that the impersonalists have. One who only thinks himself Brahman is an impersonalist, and one who acts like Brahman is the pure devotee. So Yudhisthira, and there's one word in the next verse, anavikshamano, without waiting for. He left. He who had been so attached and so dependent in his life, so intertwined with his brothers and everyone else, all the other Pandavas, he just left immediately. Maharaj Yudhisthira dressed himself in torn clothing, gave up eating all solid foods, voluntarily became dumb, and let his hair hang loose. All this combined to make him look like an urchin or madman with no occupation. He did not depend on his brothers for anything. And just like a deaf man, he heard nothing. He just left and went out. Purport. Thus being freed from all external affairs, he had nothing to do with imperial life or family prestige, and for all practical purposes he posed himself exactly like an inert, mad urchin. It did not speak of material affairs. He had no dependence on his brothers, who had all along been helping him. This stage of complete independence from everything is also called the purified stage of fearlessness. 44. He then started towards the north, treading the path accepted by his forefathers and great men, to devote himself completely to the thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he lived in that way wherever he went. He constantly remembered Krishna. He didn't think he had any other occupation or responsibility, only to remember Krishna. Towards the end of Prabhupada's purport, the Lord instructs us in the Bhagavad Gita 18:62, that one must become a devotee of the Lord, at least in the last stage of one's life. A sincere soul of the Lord, like Maharaj Yudhisthira, must abide by this instruction of the Lord for his own interest. The specific word Brahmaparam indicates Lord Sri Krishna. This is corroborated in the Bhagavad Gita by Arjuna with reference to great authorities like Asita, Devala, Narada, and Vyas. Thus, Maharaj Yudhisthira, while leaving home for the north, constantly remembered Lord Sri Krishna within himself, following in the footsteps of his forefathers as well as the great devotees of all times. So this is the departure of the Pandus, the Pandavas, from the world. The younger brothers of Maharaj Yudhisthira observed that the age of Kali had already arrived throughout the world and that the citizens of the kingdom were already affected by irreligious practice. Therefore, they decided to follow in the footsteps of their elder brother. They all had performed all the principles of religion, and as a result, rightly decided that the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna are the supreme goal of all. Therefore, they meditated upon his feet without interruption. Prabhupada's purport, we'll read some of that. In Bhagavad Gita 7:28, the Lord says that only those who have done pious deeds in previous lives and have become free from the results of all impious acts can concentrate upon the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. The Pandavas, not only in this life, but also in their previous lives, had always performed the supreme pious work, and thus they are ever free from the reactions of impious work. It is quite reasonable, therefore, that they concentrate their minds upon the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. I just remembered something that I thought was quite humorous when I heard it, that there was one very big impersonalist who is no longer in this world, who's quite popular now, and his disciples preach all over the world. He was one of the first to have Westerners come, and so he has to gather everyone in his house, and they would all sit silently. And by his meditating on the impersonal, the atmosphere would become very deep. And they would call those meetings satsang. Satsang, of course, means association with truth or eternality, like that. But there was one problem sometimes, because everyone in India is a cricket fanatic. So he was a cricket fanatic also. So when there was a conflict between the time of the satsang and the cricket match going on, some of the test matches, he would bring out the TV, and in the middle of the satsang, he would put on the cricket match. Really, this is true. And then when some of his disciples and followers, they thought, what is this? So they got up and left. And then his comment was, they don't understand the real meaning of satsang. I guess India won or something. So you can't help it. An impersonalist can't help it. They can't stay merged with the mind quiet, especially when India is on television playing like Pakistan. So how could they possibly? So what happens in the next life? That means they have desires. Huh? Or cricket or something. But they don't go to Krishna. So the Pandavas fully dropped all material identifications. And I also met another one, a businessman many, many years ago. He was a young businessman who liked to enjoy it. He had some vague understanding of Mayavad philosophy, so, or impersonal philosophy. So he was smoking a cigarette. This was in Hong Kong in the 70s. So I said, why are you smoking a cigarette? So he said, I'm not smoking, it's my body that's smoking. If I was a little more bold, I would have picked up the old stick nearby and I didn't hit you, the stick hit you. Such cheating, such silliness, such petty silliness in the name of philosophy. Therefore, Prabhupada was so against it. Everything, every purport, he'll find a way to criticize the impersonalist. Because it leads to this hypocrisy. Thus, by pure consciousness, due to constant devotional remembrance, they attain the spiritual sky, which is ruled over by the Supreme Narayan, Lord Krishna. This is attained only by those who meditate upon the one Supreme Lord without deviation. This abode of the Lord Sri Krishna, known as Golok Vrindavan, cannot be attained by persons who are absorbed in the material conception of life. But the Pandavas, being completely washed of all material contamination, attain that abode in their very same bodies. In their very same bodies, Prabhupada's purport. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, a person freed from the three modes of material nature, namely goodness, passion, ignorance, and situated in transcendence, can reach the highest perfection of life without change of body. Srila Sanatana Goswami in his Hari Bhakti Vilas says that a person, wherever he may be, can attain the perfection of a twice-born Brahman by undergoing the spiritual disciplinary actions under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, exactly as a chemist can turn gunmetal into gold by chemical manipulation. It is therefore the actual guidance that matters in the process of becoming a Brahmana, even without change of body, or going back to Godhead, without change of body. Srila Jiva Goswami remarks that the word he used in this connection positively affirms this truth, and there is no doubt about this factual position. The Bhagavad Gita 14:26 also affirms the statement of Srila Jiva Goswami when the Lord says that anyone who executes devotional service systematically without deviation can attain the perfection of Brahman by surpassing the contamination of the three modes of material nature. And when the Brahman perfection is still more advanced by the selfsame execution of devotional service, there is no doubt at all that one can attain the supreme spiritual planet, Goloka Vrindavan, without change of body, as we have already discussed in connection with the Lord's returning to his abode without a change of body. 49. Now, so the Pandavas all left and went back to Godhead. Now, whatever happened to Vidura? Text 49. Vidura, while on pilgrimage, left his body at Prabhas. That is the place where Lord Krishna remembered him to Uddhava and asked him to make sure to Maitreya Muni that he instruct Uddhava, and where of course Krishna and all the Yadavs left, and Vidura left there as well. Because he was absorbed in thought of Krishna, he was received by the denizens of the Pitraloka planet, where he returned to his original post. So he went back to where he should have been, and the Pandavas went back to where they belong. He was a demigod, and he went back to his position as Yamaraj, and the Pandavas went to rejoin Krishna in the spiritual world. 50. And this purport to 50 is very, the next to last verse in purport was very famous, very powerful. Draupadi also saw that her husbands, without caring for her, were leaving home. She knew well about Lord Vasudev, Krishna, the personality of Godhead. Both she and Subhadra became absorbed in thoughts of Krishna and attained the same results as their husbands. So everyone left. Prabhupada's purport. When flying an airplane, one cannot take care of other planes. Everyone has to take care of his own plane. And if there is any danger, no plane can help another in that condition. Similarly, at the end of life, when one has to go back home, back to Godhead, everyone has to take care of himself without help rendered by another. The help is, however, offered on the ground before flying in space. Similarly, the spiritual master, the father, the mother, the relatives, the husband, and others can all render help during one's lifetime. But while crossing the sea, one has to take care of himself and utilize the instructions formerly received. Yes. Thank you. And this is the greatest test, perhaps, in a devotee's life, is that we read, we hear, we study, we preach, but to utilize, to practically apply the theory that we preach to others is the great test. And how much we are successful in doing that will be tested at the time when we leave this world at death. Draupadi had 5 husbands, and no one asked Draupadi to come. Draupadi had to take care of herself without waiting for her great husbands. And because she was already trained, she at once took to concentration upon the lotus feet of Lord Vasudev Krishna, the personality of Godhead. The wives also got the same result as their husbands, in the same manner, that is to say, without changing their bodies, they reached the destination of Godhead. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur suggests that both Draupadi and Subhadra, although her name is not mentioned herein, got the same result. None of them had to quit their body. There was one comment that Jiva Goswami comments, Priti Sundarbha Anuchet 271, that the word Atmana in 47 or 48 is mixed with another word. Yes. Anyone find it? Yes. Or Vishayayatma B, or Virajenatmai, yes, Atmana Aiva. He, by the self same body in 47, 48, at the last part of 48. That the word Atmana means in their very same bodies. This was possible because their bodies were not material, Virajena. The word he certainly is used here to dispel any doubt that it is not possible. So Prabhupada also commented on the word he. And then the final verse in this chapter and also in the section that we've been reading, which included 13, 14, and 15. Yashradayaitad bhagavat priyanam pando sitanam iti sampriyanam Srinotyalam svastyayanam pavitram labdva harau bhaktim upaiti siddhim. the subject of the departure of the sons of Pandu for the ultimate goal of life, back to Godhead, is fully auspicious and is perfectly pure. Therefore, anyone who hears this narration with devotional faith certainly gains the devotional service of the Lord, the highest perfection of life. And Prabhupada's purport. Srimad Bhagavatam is a narration about the personality of Godhead and the devotees of the Lord, like the Pandavas. The narration of the personality of Godhead and his devotees is absolute in itself, and thus to hear it with a devotional attitude is to associate with the Lord and constant companions of the Lord. By the process of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, one can attain the highest perfection of life, namely going back home, back to Godhead, without failure. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the first canto, 15th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Pandavas Retire Timely. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Pandavas Sri Krishna ki jai. Gaur
Bhaktivedanta.
But their position neither fits into any of those categories, the Pandavas, because their relationship with Krishna had to do with Hastinapur. So where does that, I'm not sure exactly where that fits in. I'm not sure if he says Goloka. Prabhupada may have been speaking generally, meaning back to Godhead or back to Krishna. In the Jiva Goswami's comment.
Well, it's right here in the text. Maybe then what you're saying is that.
What? How was I saying that? What I said was that he may have been speaking generally. I'm not saying that he had been.
That generally, the Pandavas are not eternal associates of the Lord.
No, generally meaning about in reference to Goloka, meaning back to Godhead. Yes. Yeah. So Jiva Goswami didn't say Goloka. I've never heard them. The only other reference that I could think of is that someone like Ramananda Roy, part of him was Arjuna, right? He was a combination of Arjuna and the Shakadevi. So maybe just like Nityananda Prabhu enjoys the Madhurya Ras through Janava Devi. So if Arjuna, that person, we're into the realm of speculation, he could be in, you know, he can enjoy other rasas in different ways. If it is in fact, as you say, that their relationship with him is, with Krishna is in Boma Vrindavan.
Boma Lila,
yes. Yes, we know what it means. Yes. Navadvip? Puri. In Puri, though. Puri? No? Yes. Yes. We're into technicalities that are beyond my range of either experience or knowledge, both. But they weren't afraid of Kali, but they knew what was coming, and they had they had already put someone responsible in charge, and that's the main responsibility. You don't personally have to do it, but if someone else is going to take to be as qualified and responsible as you, you're free. And also, they had a direct indication from Narada that you only really have to stay as long as Krishna is on this planet. But the Pandavas, being completely washed of all material contamination, attain that abode in their very same bodies. Yes. That's what Srila Jiva Goswami says, that's what Srila Prabhupada says. Jiva Goswami specifically says they had spiritual bodies. Because there's another way that one can attain, go back to Godhead without changing their body too. There is another way to be a Jiva Mukta, that you're in a material body, but that's not limiting your relationship with Krishna. Like Prabhupada in one purport describes it, like television, the pastimes are going on. That's one way of being in the self-same body going back to Godhead. But that doesn't appear to be the way that the Pandavas went back to Godhead. They just left. Like Krishna, he left with his... That's the comparison that actually is made in the purport by Prabhupada. That like Krishna, they just left. And Krishna, of course, left his Virata Rupa behind, but they didn't leave... It seems like they didn't leave anything behind. But in the Mahabharata, I think it's described somewhat differently. You know, it describes how Draupadi fell, and this Bhima fell, and this one fell. And each one, when they fell, there was in a particular order, for it was a particular reason. But there doesn't seem to be quite any falling the way it's described here. And Prabhupada's own body was a material. But there's a difference between a spiritual body and a spiritualized body. And the comparison is given the difference between a gold box, a solid gold box, and a gold-plated box. So although Prabhupada's body was gold-plated, it was spiritualized, still it became older, it became weak, it had problems in this way, and had problems in that way. Yes, we say he left the planet just to... So we don't use the words, he died. Not... He left, and he left his transcendental body, which is worshipable. So, I wouldn't see any impropriety in it. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe someone can correct me on this. But it's because we don't... The left his body term is used so just to avoid saying died, because the person hasn't died. And that's my understanding. Well, he didn't annihilate his gross body in the sense that he dissolved it there on the spot, because later on he dressed in a particular way and he headed towards the north. So if he had just annihilated according to the exact English meaning, he couldn't have obviously, you know, if it decomposed on the spot, there was no need for him to dress and there was no way he could go towards the north. So it must mean in a different way, maybe in the way of identification or something like that. Amalgamated, could you look up Ajuhot? Or Hutwa, offering. Yeah, it's off. Yeah, that it's more. It's more. It's in the sense of. I think it's in the sense of one of the comments that were made about he offered. Yeah, Jiva Goswami's comment. Those things unfit to become merged in the individual soul were merged into where they were originated. So a division was made somehow, in the Atma, in the all. Different levels of who he was. Well, so many people do this, but yet, and possibly Damien is pointing out that yet, this is describing it as if it's a material body, and he broke his identification with the material body. But yet, it said later, he says he went back in his spiritual body, the self same body. Yes. That happens so many times in the Bhagavatam. When you hear even about so many of the kings and their sons.
Prithrasura also.
Yeah. And the kings and their sons. Some of them, so I can't remember who it was now, right off the top of my head, but it was, I think, one of the sons of Prithu, maybe the grandson of Prithu Maharaj, that he just didn't want to be king. You know, he did it for a while, and then he just left. He was, he was a Mahabhagavat. He didn't want to chastise the citizens. Just didn't want to get involved. It happens. So we could say, from one point of view, we could say, oh, it's not dutiful. But when you have consciousness like that, we can't, it can't be judged from our lowly position. And again and again and again, yes. On tomorrow night, I'd like to have the kirtan again in reading from Chaitanya Bhagavat. There's something real interesting and all about Lord Nityananda tomorrow night. But I'd like to start it a little bit later because I feel bad that we start at the same time as the arti. As if, huh? Excuse me? Yeah, but we can't, I don't think we can do it earlier. 7:15 is what I was thinking. Anyway, those. If anyone has a better idea of a time, we can try it at that time. But you've just been informed, Prabhu. Mother has informed you. Okay, so, and if when you come, we'll have Gona Taya. Anyone like to bring flowers or fruit? Huh? 7:15 to 8:15, at least this time. Then we can see. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.